Hello. Good morning. I'm going to call the meeting to order, the California Native American Heritage Commission meeting. It's Friday, October 18th. It is 10:12 a.m. Calling the meeting to order and welcoming everybody today. Are we have an opening? Okay.
Right, Christine?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we have a pretty good agenda today, and we're immediately going to go into closed session after we do the roll call of the commissioners. And then we'll be excusing all of you out for closed session. So let me do a roll call of everybody. Commissioner Lopez Kiefer.
Here.
Commissioner Atterbury?
Here.
Commissioner Tamayat Sensley? Not here. Commissioner McKay?
Present.
Present. Commissioner Mungry? Not here. Commissioner Myers? Not here. Commissioner Pagaling?
Present also.
And Commissioner Miranda, here.
Good job.
So we have a quorum, and now we can go through introductions of commissioners. Why don't we go from the far left all the way back?
Ayuki, Yamahit, hello and good morning. My name is Buster Atterbury. I'm the Koruk chairman, and I am also the Pacific Region representative for Tribal Department of Interior budget meetings, and I'm also on the executive board for the newly formed California Chairpersons Association. You want one?
Good morning. Welcome. It's good to see your faces again. It's the best way to go ahead and know what people are like rather than sometimes see just written things that are coming in just in emails. So it's nice of you to be here. Staff, thank you for all that you do and supporting the commission. And I was thinking every time you come to one of these meetings, you want to make sure you make an effort to say something that's relevant to your life. And so for me, I decided I would go ahead and wear pink in my shirt with respect to all the people, not just women, the men as well, that go through and survive or have had to deal with cancer. So my respect to all of you and my honor, because I'm also a survivor of this, unfortunately. But I do know the struggle, and I want people to be aware that I honor them and their efforts and their families. Oh, thank you.
Leok Benel. Ikume Besai. Nano Yet Siktu. Good morning. My name is Marshall McKay. I am Chairman Emeritus from Yocha Dihi Wintu Nation in Yolo County. I'm happy to be serving on the panel today and on the commission. I believe we have a great deal of responsibility and work to do ahead of us going forward. A lot of the issues that Native Americans face, I think, have been unjustly overlooked, and I'd like this commission to bear down on the pertinent issues going forward. So thank you very much, and thank you all for being here.
Miriam, Notang Mary Lopez Kiefer Yoa. Hello, everyone. My name is Mary Lopez Kiefer. I'm a member of the San Luis Rey Band of Mission Indians. I serve as their chief legal counsel. It is my pleasure to be here today, and I'm hoping that we are able to have thoughtful and respectful discussions today. And again, thank you, everyone, for coming.
Good morning. I'm Laura Miranda. I'm the vice chairperson of the Native American Heritage Commission. Thank you all for being here. I'm from the Pechanga tribe. We were here yesterday doing a listening session on the definition of California Native American tribes. And we had a good number of responses and comments sent in. A few and people were able to make it in person, which was great. I just wanted to thank everybody for participating in that. And I felt like in the session, I could sense some of the trauma that was coming up for folks, and it was coming up for me too. And I just want to say how really important it is that we speak kindly to each other, because we're all trying our best and we're all here to do the best service that we can for tribes in California. And just follow our hearts. Sometimes we forget that. Sometimes we keep speaking from here. It doesn't always work. So from my perspective, from myself, I just wanted to notice that observation yesterday, and it is something very real. So I honor that, and I want to have a space here. I think we all do want to have a space here where we can be honest with each other and yet treat each other with kindness while we're doing that, while we're expressing honestly what's going on for us and our opinions on things. So I just wanted to sort of set that frame. Thank you all for being here, and looking forward to a good meeting and to hearing from most of you, all of you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Strike that from the record. Good morning, everyone. I'm Christina Snyder. I am a member of the Dry Creek Pomo, and I'm the Executive Secretary of the Native American Heritage Commission. Before we go into staff introductions and our Attorney General's representative, I did want to mention that we may take items out of order in the event that we might lose quorum early. So just letting you know that that may happen. Thank you. Staff?
My name is Emily Archer. I'm an office assistant with the Native American Heritage Commission.
Native American Heritage Commission staff.
John Applebaum, AD's representative.
Okay, we're going to move into closed session to hear two items. So we will go move into closed session. Everybody, unfortunately, is going to have to clear the room, and then we will let you know when we reconvene. Thank you. Welcome back, everybody. We're going to call to order the public session of the NHC meeting. Closed session report, nothing to report out of closed session. And that was item number two. We're moving on to item number three, approval of minutes. And for those that might be tuning in, we did the traditional opening off camera. So we did that when we reconvened. So we have a number of sets of minutes. October 19th, open and closed session. April 19th, open and closed session. July 19th, open and closed session. Do I hear a motion?
Entertain a motion to approve all three of those dates, October 19th, April 19th, 2019, and July 19th, 2019, in my motion.
Second. You got to move with the amendment.
Okay, with the amendment to allow the secretary to sign off on these minutes. Is that correct? Am I looking at that as the amendment we need to have? Because previously it was the chairperson, and we don't have a chairperson right now.
No. That's not the issue.
What is it?
Under the bylaws, the secretary is required to sign off on it, so we're just amending them to...
It's written wrong.
Yeah, it's just written up wrong. The minutes.
So how would you like the motion to read?
I'll go ahead and make a motion at this time to approve.
I think we have a second.
Well, we didn't have a second.
We had a second.
We did. I can just tell me.
You can. But let Reggie amend his motion. Okay.
To amend the minutes
as written to insert the secretary's signature line.
That's satisfying. Then it's so amended.
So I hear a motion from Commissioner Pagling to approve all three dates, sets of minutes, open and closed session, with an amendment to change or with a change to the minutes adding the signature line for the NHC secretary. And I have a second by Commissioner McKay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
It passes unanimously. Okay. Now we have item number 4, which is approval of proposed meeting dates for 2019-2020. I'm very excited for this item because we all have hectic schedules. All of us are wearing 10 hats. So we're trying to set some meeting dates. Everybody can calendar right now. We have proposed meeting dates as Friday, January 17th, Friday, April 17th, and Friday, July 17th. Do I hear a motion?
Before we take a motion on that, shouldn't there be a fourth date, an October date?
Oh, we're just doing the rest of the fiscal year.
To clarify, under your bylaws, you're supposed to vote on these in your July meeting. We didn't have a quorum at that meeting, so typically we'll vote to approve every fiscal year. So it runs through the end of June 30. That's the state calendar.
So that's why there's not four dates, because we missed the...
Okay. I move that we approve the proposed meeting dates for the 2019-2020 fiscal year for Jen... Okay.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Do it. All in favor?
Aye.
Oh, I can't vote. Sorry. Okay, that passes unanimously. Those are our dates, January 17th, April 17th, and July 17th. And now we'll move into the Executive Secretary's report. And we'll hear from Christina Snyder, Executive Secretary.
Thank you, Vice Chairwoman. So I'm going to go into a general update first. And then also, as I go through items, I'm going to pause for comments from commissioners. And then if there are any additional comments, and then we'll go to the next line item. So... staff has processed 1,330 CEQA project requests. Those project requests required staff to conduct 3,881 searches to the Sacred Lands file. Staff has processed 200 timber harvest project requests. Those project requests required staff to conduct 3,000 searches of the Sacred Lands file. Staff has processed and responded to 193 AB 52 requests and has processed and responded to 99 SB 18 requests. Debbie Treadway and I attended the Assembly Native American Select Committee hearing, the first of its kind. Debbie Treadway reported on the history of Native American Heritage Commission, and I reported on the five-year strategic plan. We have hired a new staffer, Emily Archer, who's sitting next to me right now. And all of our positions that were authorized under the BCP that we submitted last year have been established, with the exception of the Chief Counsel, which is in process with CalHR right now. Currently, we're going to be developing a hiring timeline with the State Lands Commission, and we are going to post that on the website if people want to check and see when we're planning on opening those positions. We're constricted, and so is State Lands, based on our internal capacity to hire on and train people, and so we're going to do that in kind of a measured out way, but by the end of all of it, we should have 23 staff at the Native American Heritage Commission. We're also expanding into the adjacent office space, so we'll have a little bit more space for all of those staff as well.
Can you just list out all of the positions in the legal department? Because I think I'm confused of the difference between chief counsel and the rest of the positions.
Sure. So chief counsel oversees all of the other positions. And so that's not established right now. The position we have right now has always been an attorney three. So that's currently in recruitment. So if anybody wants to work with us, we are recruiting for that. And so the chief counsel would be established as a CEA position, which is exempt from typical hiring process. It's basically if we have a candidate that we think would be good to oversee the entire department, which includes enforcement, processing, certain claims, compliance, PRA requests, all of the things that we oversee and work with John, our AG representative, this person would be responsible for overseeing that entire shop and would also lead kind of the policy direction of the legal department.
Okay.
And then we have on our website is an org chart that has all of the positions. Did you want to say something? I mean, you're going to need to do that in the near future, so.
So currently, we'll be hiring.
Turn it on?
Yeah.
Right here?
Is it on? Okay, sorry, I apologize. Okay.
If the light's on, it's on.
Okay, am I ready? Okay, so currently it will be two attorneys, and currently the one of the attorneys is going out for recruitment, should be today, maybe early next week. So we'll hire two attorneys, two legal assistants, and an office assistant for clerical. We currently have the filled position of the SSM1 position, so we'll be hiring like five positions for the legal staff.
Yeah, okay. Okay, thank you. That helps a lot because we're just down a lot of people in the legal department. Thanks.
To be fair, there's only been one and now two. So we are building.
50% is 50%, though. I don't know how we did it, to be honest.
Great. And are there any other questions on those updates? Okay.
Are you going to be addressing the strategic plan, or was this it? Because I know there's the chief counsel, but then also the deputy executive secretary, and then all of those positions.
Those are all authorized as well.
And what are those positions?
Debbie? So they're established. We just aren't hiring for them yet.
They're established positions. We're just in the process of trying to recruit. So, I mean, recruitment with the state, pretty close, is an act of God. But, you know, I mean, it's a very long, drawn-out process. So all of those positions have been established. We're currently recruiting for an AGPA position, and that recruitment has just ended. So we're in the process of actually...
AGPA.
What's AGP?
I'm sorry. It's a cultural resources analyst position. It'll be in the environment. These positions will be in the environment and cultural
area. And so to clarify, there's an environmental section under the strategic plan. There's an admin section, which will help us do a lot of our day-to-day work. And then there is a legal section under the strategic plan.
That's correct.
All of these are according to the strategic plan.
That's correct. So in the admin, we will have three positions there that we haven't even they're approved. We've gotten duty statements and all that information. We have not started recruiting for them yet. And most of it is because the way that personnel is, they really just want us to do two at a time. So we're just kind of doing two at a time. And, you know, unfortunately for us, you know, some staff are moving on, so we have to backfill those positions. So those are priority hiring positions. So back to what we have vacant, we have three positions in the admin. We will have one deputy executive secretary. We're currently hiring for the cultural resource analyst, and we should have interviews in the next couple weeks on that. So hopefully we'll get that filled soon.
Yeah, and so to clarify, the state, when you get authorization from the legislature to have positions, those are authorized, and then you have to go through the process of establishing those positions through CalHR, through this really long drawn-out process. So all of those are established, but we haven't gone out for recruitment because the hiring process itself takes an incredibly long time and a lot of resources. Our way of addressing that so that people can have some clarity about our timelines and how we plan on filling those and recruiting those is to create a timeline with State Lands Commission that feels doable for them and for us to be able to do those recruitments so that we can do it in kind of a phased approach, but so that people on the outside who are interested in filling those positions can start thinking about, refreshing their resumes and all of that.
So when you say admin positions, are you talking about cultural analysts?
No, admin would be like the person that handles the accounting, the contracts, the personnel transactions, because right now those all are me.
How many cultural analysts will we have?
Four. We'll have two senior and two, junior. You'll have four analyst, and then you have basically a person that sits above them that kind of can manage what they're doing as a senior person, and then above that person would be the deputy.
Okay. And Christina, executive secretary, where are we with the deputy executive secretary position? Is that
also with the governor's office?
Yes.
No, it is. We've established a deputy secretary, executive secretary, and so that is actually an appointed position through the governor's office. So it's through that process, and that's the timeline is based on, you know, when they do interviews and all that.
I just have one last question. Since this was done through, 2 years ago, is there a timeline on when we have to have these positions filled? Are we in danger of not being able to fill these positions with financing?
No. We've had that conversation with our personnel office, and it's not a problem.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Debbie.
Great. So now we will move on to the Tribal Cultural Resources Projects. So UCLA is developing AB 52 training manual, an AB 52 training manual. So this fall, and this is from Professor Van Schilfgaard, sent an update that this semester two students are developing a training manual for tribes concerning the consultation processes provided in AB 52. I believe this is a continuation of the work that Laura was, vice chairwoman, was working on. And if you have any added comments, since I think you just visited the clinic, feel free to jump in. In addition to outlining the legal provisions of the statute, students are meeting with representatives from both Fernandinho Tataviam Band of Mission Indians and the Pechanga Band of Luiseno Indians to document lessons learned and the practical implementation and use of AB 52. The resulting manual is designed to provide tribes both an introduction to the consultation and cultural resource protection process, as well as guidance on how this process can be effectively and efficiently used. In anticipation of this project and towards informing the entire clinic regarding these issues, Vice Chairwoman Laura Miranda and Michelle Faley will be serving as, or have served as, guest lecturers for the clinic's seminar on October 10th. They are also doing tribal trainings, so in anticipation for work in future semesters, all clinic students will be attending the Interdisciplinary Public Symposium, Lighting a Path Forward UC Land Grants, Public Memory, and the Tavangar, sorry everybody, for my mispronunciation, to take place at the UCLA James West Alumni Center, which just happened this week. The clinic anticipates working in partnership with the Human Rights in Action Clinic, which is developing a white paper subsequent to the conference concerning cultural resource protection and NAGPRA/CalNAGPRA. The clinic anticipates working with Dr. Wendy Teeter to leverage that white paper in developing a tribal training or potentially series of trainings regarding lessons learned. Sorry. With the UC Berkeley, they're in process in developing the pro bono legal program, and they will be hiring a staff attorney to oversee that. The idea is to build out a full clinic, but that will require additional resources. So if there are tribes that are interested in supporting a full legal clinic at UC Berkeley, which means basically a tenured professor that will build out an entire program, please reach out to me and I'll put you in contact with Dean Chemerinsky. And that is also large thanks to John Applebaum, who has a great relationship with the dean and has basically made all of this happen. So thank you, John. And from UC Davis, they are in the planning phases of working on a project with the California Parks Department regarding policies and procedures around repatriation issues. They're basically going to be working on developing policies and procedures for that department because of the substantial collection that they have, and hopefully that can serve as a model agency-wide to help facilitate repatriation. Does anyone have any questions on the clinics? And that's Judge Williams is heading that.
I just have a brief question. I remember at the last meeting you said we were able to fund these clinics with the personnel savings. What happens when we have the personnel that we just talked about in place regarding the funding for those clinics? Are these just temporary pilots?
Once we have a full staff, those clinics we will either get a BCP for. Is everything okay?
She got out of the hospital this morning, so she just showed up. I don't know. She seems to be doing well, considering.
Okay.
Once we don't have an actual, once we completely staff up and we don't have salary savings, those clinics, we will either submit a BCP for if we want to maintain them, they're project specific, so they're not ongoing projects. So we'll reassess whether we have additional funds to be able to fund them.
So do they have like deliverable deadlines, whatever they're working on to be completed by, you know, a certain time?
Yes, they're under contract. So the contracts run 2 years, is that?
3 years.
3 years. And so the contracts are guaranteed for that timeline. Any other questions? Okay. So CalNAGPRA. So We made this as an information slash action item in the event that the commission would like to do anything on this. We have, again, a contract with CILS, and they're still kind of scoping some of the issues they're seeing in drafting regulations. In doing this preliminary work, they've identified a number of issues with the CalNAGPRA statute as it's written that's going to make it difficult to draft regulations in a way that makes sense, and especially given where the law is now. We're seeing some of these issues come up, too, in our review of the UC's draft policy, draft NAGPRA policy that you will discuss, that we'll discuss in a couple of items. And so in order for us to move forward on the CalNAGPRA work, like the regulations and everything, I'm advising that the committee use its subcommittee, which you voted on in January 2017, would be Commissioners Pagling and McKay to examine and clarify these issues in the law that would prevent us from moving forward on regulations with a final outcome report within, you know, the next several months. And I would have our CILS contract devote itself to staffing that because it's seeming like there are some substantial issues that may get in the way of this commission being able to do this work in a way that reflects current law and policy.
So we're on item number 2 under the Executive Secretary's report, CalNAGPRA update. Do commissioners have comments on this? One of the questions before us is establishing a subcommittee to deal with this, but we had already done that a couple years ago, and Christina just named off the folks that were originally put on the subcommittee. We wanted to renew that, check in with you two, make sure you still want to do this. We're at a juncture where we're looking at, we need to adopt regulations, the commission does, so we can carry out our statutory duties under the law. There are some hiccups, though. There's some potential conflicts in the law between the federal law and the state law. There are some unclear portions of the state law. There are some portions of the state law that are outdated and may need legislative fixes. We're not sure. So that's part of the analysis that CILS is doing, is to look at all of the impediments to the commission moving forward with actually drafting a cohesive, workable set of regulations. We had them go into drafting the regulations and then realized there were a lot of issues. So we're taking this initial pre-step to call out these issues. Do Commissioner Pagling, Commissioner McKay want to continue to serve now that we've got issues in front of us on the NAGPRA front, CalNAGPRA front? Great.
Sure, yes.
Great.
Great, so then I will direct CILS to help staff that. So what we'll do is I'll circle back with the subcommittee to set up some listening sessions throughout the state, and we can start working through all of that, and they can be staffing you and helping to draft an outcome report.
No.
Okay, any other? Okay, great. So MLD regulations. This again is an information slash action item, because if we want to move forward the way that I am recommending, you will have to amend a prior motion that you made. So staff were assigned to assist with the development of regulations on in May 2019. Part of that is that they've been reviewing all of the records and documents that we have in our possession. We want to initiate the rulemaking process, which you did vote to do in January of 2017. But the last meeting, I'd recommend that you release the draft to tribes again on our contact list for one final comment period before putting it through the OAL process, which is a generally open to the public, complete. You're putting it out there. That's your best final offer before it goes through the public comment periods. And so I had recommended this because the last consultation date was back in 2015, and so wanted to make sure that tribes had another bite at the apple to reflect current issues, and I recommended a 45-day tribal comment period. In January, you voted to initiate the OAL process with the regulations as drafted at that point in time. So what I would like to propose is that because you operate using Robert's rules, you will have to vote to amend that prior motion made in January 2017 and vote to move forward as recommended, which would be to release the most recent draft for a 45-day tribal comment period. We'll then incorporate any additional comments and concerns into that draft, present a new draft, or recommend proceeding with the current draft based on no comments or concerns at our January meeting, and then initiate the OAL process then.
Okay, so we're on item number 3, MLD regulations under Executive Secretary's report. I'm one of the members of the MLD subcommittee. Commissioner Tumamayet Stensley is the other MLD subcommittee member. Actually, I would like the MLD subcommittee members, if can we insert before we do the public 45-day review, that can we just have, like, I don't know, 14 days or, you know, a period of time before that to look at it, because I haven't looked at it in 2-3 years, and just curious, picking it up again with fresh eyes, to do a read-through before we do the public vetting. But otherwise, I'm fine with that proposal. But we, if commissioners have questions or we need, let's talk about it.
I just remember the consultations, the discussion about the regs. It was so much time was invested in consulting with the tribes before even drafting the regs. And then we opened it up to public comment period for the draft of the regs, so that when we took it, when it went to the next level, it would come back for a public review, official public review, and we were, it was an extended period of time to allow for that additional comments. I just feel that we should just be moving forward. I understand that it was January 2017, but the amount of work that's already gone into it, it's already going to come back for a public review. I would just hate to see this process keep being dragged on. I just feel we should be more efficient, because these were issues that really opinions haven't changed on these incredibly personal issues when it comes to the MLD regs. So it'd be my position that we don't amend it, and that we move forward like we voted in 2017.
I mean, do other commissioners have comments about that?
Yes. So I would like to, and I'm not on the subcommittee. Unfortunately, the meeting for the MLD happens on Thursdays, which is our council meetings, and I have to attend our council meetings. So I haven't been involved. I guess I would maybe want to look at the amendments. The proposed amendments, I should say.
Yeah, that's sort of why I asked. Like, so, it's my opinion. This has been sitting cold for a couple of years. Yeah, the issues are still the same, but people aren't engaged in this right now, and I want to give them a time to re-engage in this. I don't, to go straight into the administrative rulemaking process, from a tribal perspective, we always complain when that, we feel like that happens too soon, because that is the comment period. So I'd rather, error on the side of, and I don't even think it's an error, but I think it's prudent to do this vetting one more time. It's not going to tack on that much time, but it's going to give people time to get re-engaged, to get their notes together. This has been a couple of years since we started talking about this. Plus, all these new issues have come up with the CalNAGPRA and with definitions of tribes, and there have been some inquiries into, you know, refreshing or really understanding what the commission's internal process is when they select an MLD. So I think this is a great opportunity for us to do some interface and an off, you know, pre formal administrative record to really get clear on where people might be today. And there might be different people that are participating and representing tribes at this point. There might be, you know, there's a lot of changes that happen in 2 years. So I'm for going ahead and doing this vetting before we just straight move into the administrative review making process. The other piece is we are short staffed right now, and we need time to allow to hire those positions. If those can come online in the next couple months, I think it'll help once we go through administrative rulemaking. Because once we're into that, that's a whole constraint that has set timelines that we have to meet, and there are no ifs, ands, and buts about that, or else we have to start over. So I want to make sure we're ramped up to do that.
I guess my concerns is that unless we have a firm timeline we're dealing with, there's no, we started the consultations in 2015. I remember, and they lasted for 2 years. The executive secretary, the chief legal counsel, they went up and down the state and had those public hearings. I remember I went back to the January 2017 minutes, and it was very lengthy because of the amount of comments and discussion the commission had and their decision to move forward at that time. So I'm afraid that if we don't move forward, when will we move forward? Because I know tribes, I know tribal members have been waiting to have these regulations put in place. Again, we received comments during the first run through. I'm hesitant to say let's keep prolonging this process because we need the regs in place.
I think we all want the regs in place. I think the staff, more than anything, want the regs in place, and they're the ones that are giving us the recommendation about doing this refresh. Is there something we can do, Commissioner Kiefer Lopez? Like, could we set, if we approve a set time frame with deadlines for us right now, will that help you to feel more comfortable that we're on track? This is largely set the last couple of years, and now we are moving. We are trying to bring it online. So, and it's set for various other reasons of not being, you know, completely sure if we were capable of having the resources to move through an administrative review process and all of that, and various other reasons. But how about if we just set a timeline, a new timeline right now, because we had a timeline set before. I remember Terry Robinson had put one together for us, and it was an estimated timeline. We all know, you know, these things don't always move the way we want them to move. And I feel the same way. I want this to move. But one refresh is not a delay of reopening this for months. We're not talking about that. We're talking about just one more 45-day review to just basically it's put the public on notice, put the tribes on notice, put the interested parties on notice. Hey, we're going to get ready to move into an administrative rulemaking process. Take a look at this. Comment now. Or you can comment then when we move into the rulemaking process. It's almost like a pre-notice. So that's the way I'm seeing it. But let's put together a time frame, like a timeline, if you want to do that.
I think that's the only responsible thing we could do at this point.
I think as proposed, that would be, it would be a 60-day timeline and then
so
release.
So let's write down some dates. Let's do it so we have a calendar of dates that's counted out.
And the only reason I said we would bring back to January is in case there are substantial changes that need to happen, which I don't necessarily foresee, but I don't want to put something out that all of you haven't approved.
So can we do from now until the end of this month for the commissioners to just relook at it? So that would be to the 31st. If Commissioner Atterbury, if you want to look at it and have, if you have comments between now and the end, would the end of the month be an okay time for you to look at it? Okay. So then it will go out.
And just to clarify, when you look at this, just because of our Bagley-Keene constraints, please do not discuss it amongst each other. Please, any comments you have, send directly to me.
Thank you for the reminder. So, Christina will take all of the comments. So then, what would the date that it would be go out for the 45-day pre-review? You want to make that like the 4th? You need time. If we send you something on the 31st that needs tweaking.
Wouldn't we have to vote on whatever is going out like we did before?
We can make amendments, send back out on the 8th, give commissioners time to see whether there is something you need to actually put action on or discuss.
But I think that's the point of the MLD subcommittee. I don't know why it okay.
Do you have
potential? Is there differences between whether it's, I mean, I'm talking about substantial changes, right? Like,
I'm sorry.
We're asking the AG a question. So if the commissioners get a look at it before we send out for the 45-day pre-review, this isn't the administrative rulemaking process. We don't have to come back to the commission to approve it. It's only before the draft that we're sending to go through the administrative only rulemaking, right?
Under Bagley-Keene, if you make changes.
I'm sorry, folks.
Oh, you have to come. I'm sorry, John. You have to come to the microphone.
Sorry, Bob.
Bob?
So under Bagley-Keene, all your deliberations have to be done in public. So if you make changes to the proposed regs, those changes would need to be done in public. So your deliberations have to be done publicly, and so your discussion about those changes would need to be done publicly. The separate issue is the administrative process, and you're still pre, my understanding is you're still pre that process. That process is a separate administrative process that has to go through publishing the regs, and then you'll take public comment at that time. If you make amendments in response to public comment, then you will start that process over again, and the public gets to comment on those changes again under that process.
Let's back up, because the question we're asking is pre the administrative rulemaking process.
Correct.
It's so right now we've had this document that the commission did approve in 2017.
Right.
We haven't moved forward to put it through the administrative rulemaking process.
Right.
So we're getting ready to do that.
Correct.
But in preparation for that, since it's been sitting for a couple of years, we want to vet it to the public.
Correct.
I would like to just look at it before we vet it to the public, but maybe it makes sense, Commissioner Atterbury, that we just look at it when it goes to the public instead of having a pre-review. Like, we just look at it then. And that way we don't have to waste time if you're saying the, like, let's say Commissioner Atterbury finds something that he wants, has a question about, and we want to edit it. Are you saying that it has to come back to a full commission meeting? We edit the document, approve it, and then send out to this 45-day pre, is it OAL? I can't remember the acronym. OAL. Review process.
We
have to do that, right?
We could also call a special meeting as well in the event that there are substantial changes.
But your deliberations have to be done publicly, so if someone is proposing changes to it, then those deliberations have to be done publicly, and if you make changes, those changes would be public if that's what you so choose to do, or you can do what you're otherwise proposing, which is you can take the existing draft, which has already been approved,
right,
make that public, and then that commissioners can then give their comments to Christina.
Let's just do that. Okay. I mean, I'm comfortable with that. If you okay, because I don't want to tack on a whole other step. So how quickly can you send out for the 45-day, if we're going to make a timeline right now? How quickly could it go out for the public 45-day review? This is not the OAL. This is just
Monday.
Okay. And
Do we need to do that? This is Commissioner McKay. Do we need to do that or just go forward and set up the public hearings and get the information there? Because we do have extensive minutes already on the issue, because we can't foresee what the public is going to say. And we're just, that would just be wasting 45 days, in my opinion.
You don't want to send it out for a pre-review before we go into the formal administrative rulemaking process? Is that what you're saying,
Commissioner McKay? That's correct. That's what I'm saying.
Well, and to clarify, it would be just for tribal consultation. It wouldn't be a public. It would go to the tribes on the contact list. And just to...
So we're going to have to vote on this, I think.
I probably don't need to add this, but I think just in terms of state consultation policies, if another agency ever did something like this and didn't put it back out
right
for review, I would be slapping them on the wrist for that.
So, but we did. We did
in
2 years.
In
2015,
tribal councils, there's some that turn over every 2 years.
We did, and I guess where my frustration is that we knew that it was all about time. We wanted to move forward, and that's why we took the vote in January of 2017.
But now it's been 3 years. What's another 3 months? It's not even going to be that. It's going to be 2 months, if that, to get it right. I think we're going to have to vote on this because I think we have a divided commission. So there is a recommendation from staff that we do not move directly into the OAL administrative review process. We, on the front end, build in a 45-day comment for tribal governments, tribes, tribal communities that are affected by MLD statute, that goes out on Monday. And that's what I was trying to set up a timeline to, just to have some dates so that we know what we're talking about. We can see this on paper. Can we do that? Can we just put together some dates and then we can get a motion going and put this to a vote? Or do you want to just vote on, you know, the plan that staff has proposed first?
Or do you want to do a vote on just, I guess, acknowledging the motion of 2017 and the approval and moving forward?
We don't have to do that. We don't have to do that. So right now what's being brought to us by staff is a request to relook at that. They're saying that, yes, they acknowledge there's been an approval. It was 2 years ago. But they want to do a quick refresher for 45 days before we pick up that plan again. So that's what's before us. That's the question that's before us. As an MLD subcommittee member, I'm in favor of doing the quick refresher for 45 days with interested members of the community and people that are going to be affected by this MLD statute, and then move into the OAL formal administrative rulemaking process. And one of the reasons is exactly what Executive Secretary Snyder is saying. I believe that we would hold an agency to do this too if something was sitting around for a couple of years and it hadn't been in the forefront of discussions, to just re-vet it and get it going again. So do I hear a motion?
Commissioner Pagley, just, we have already the process in hand, and for clarification purposes, I'm looking at your request. The request from staff is to have it put out 45 days for tribal consultation. Is that just correct? Not public, just tribal consultation.
Well, the communities that are affected by the MLD statute, so yes, it's tribal consultation.
So it's a 45-day comment period, not exclusive to tribal.
Correct. You have to make it open to the public under Bagley Keene.
And the second part of this would be, after 45 days, what are we asking to happen after that point?
So, again, right now, we have an approved, commission-approved set of regulations that was approved 2 years ago. In 2017, the last public comment we heard on this was 2015. Since 2017, these regulations have been completed, but we were unable to move forward. They were ready to go in 2017 into the formal OAL review process. Which, just to clarify, so when a government agency in California prepares a set of regulations and they're to go along with the statute, they have to go through a specific administrative review process where public has comment on it, and we have to respond to those comments. And it's an entire process. It's very formal. It builds the public record. So if anybody wants to challenge any of the regulations that we approve at some point, they can. And it's based on this public record. So it's going into the formal review process. The commission approved to do that in 2017 with a set of regulations. They set for 2 years. Now, Executive Secretary Snyder, along with her staff, are ready to go and move those through the OAL process, the administrative review process. What they are asking is, before we do that, can we just have an informal but still public review? Quick one, 45 days, and maybe we put it to 30, I don't know, but like 45-day review, that it goes to the public, and after that, we will go back into the plan that we originally had, go through the OAL administrative review process. That's all that's happening here, is to tack on a 45-day public review before that.
Looks like we may also have public comment. That.
May I?
Yeah.
Hi. Yeah. Hi, I'm Michelle Lapina. I'm a tribal attorney.
Okay, I'll take it. Thank you.
Representing a number of tribes. And I remember when the consultations were happening in 2015. And I have to say that there was a feeling in Indian country that the NAHC hadn't actually promulgated any regs yet. And there wasn't really a lot of confidence that that was going to happen. And I know for that reason, many people didn't participate in that process. I didn't. I know that I've seen it, but this commission has never promulgated regulations.
Right.
And so the idea that it was going to happen, I think was, you know, obviously many people put time and effort and energy into the process, and we have to respect that. But I think that it's just as many, if not more, people from tribal organizations and tribal entities just sort of were on a wait and see what happens approach. And I think it would be a good idea to have just a quick notice to everybody, the commission is moving forward with these regulations because it has never happened before. So it is a new process that has never occurred since the NAHC was created in 1978. And giving everybody notice that this was happening, I think, would be a positive reflect. It would reflect positively on the commission. And I don't think it would undermine the regulations as they were drafted, because if they are adequate and contain all of the, you know, current issues, that they were done in a way that lasted over time, they'll hold water and they'll move forward. And if not, it'll be a good opportunity to catch those mistakes before we get into the public discussion of them, which could make the outcome more controversial than it would need to be. I just would encourage you to take the time. I think that would be helpful. That's just my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you. The other concern I have is that we're coming up on the holidays. And I know in my community, like, if we don't get things done by November, Thanksgiving, it's not going to happen before the end of the year. And I would hate to put an administrative, an OAL process in front of the tribes during the holidays. So that's another piece of just where we are, just food for thought. But we probably should move forward with this with a motion.
So all you've asked for is just an extension of time here just to go through review. We haven't decided 30 days or 45 days. Other than that, it continues on with the process of initiating the administrative rules, right? After the comment period, it just goes right in. Staff will go ahead and begin to initiate that process.
Yeah, you would basically just be amending the prior motion from 2017 to reflect that you would be releasing subject to the 45-day comment period. And I think if there are substantial changes that come out of that comment period, then we will bring that back to the commission to vote on the amended draft. But at that point, it would be completely ready for release. And hopefully at that point, we would have the capacity to also staff that process.
Okay, you guys.
The minutes now from January 2017. And Chairperson Ramos and Vice Chairperson Miranda reminded the commissioners that this was an initial draft and that they noted that this proposed document would allow input from various tribal scenarios. Because I had concerns about moving forward at that time. So, of course, I'll defer to the commission, but it's one of those scenarios where the reason why we made that motion was because the feeling in Indian Country was that this was not going to happen. We were not going to ever have RECs. So that's my concern. I just wanted to keep seeing it move forward.
It is moving forward. This is not, it wasn't moving forward, but now it is moving forward. And this is a way that it can move forward, that as an MLD subcommittee member, which I hope the commission will defer to me, and unfortunately Julie's not here, to go forward moving it with the insertion of the 45-day pre-review.
Chairperson Rand, I'd like to go ahead and place that motion in order for the 45-day comment period so we can continue moving forward to get this done.
I have a motion. Do I hear a second?
Oh, 2 seconds.
Fighting for it. I think I heard Commissioner Atterbury.
Chairman Atterbury.
Thank you. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, passes unanimously. So what we're going to do is move forward with the MLD regulations. We're moving forward with the process. We're picking it up since it was stalled in 2017. But what we're going to do is insert a 45-day review period to the public immediately prior to going into the administrative rulemaking process. So that should be sent out for tribes this coming week. I'm assuming staff will figure out how to count out the due date, and that will be clearly stated in the letter, the due date, and where to send the comments to, and all of that necessary information for the notice.
And other public notice requirements.
Absolutely. Thank you, commissioners. We will send that out Monday with the due date in the subject line to all of our contact list, and then it will also be posted on the website. And then I forgot to mention, too, if you have comments during this meeting and you are live streaming, you can send those comments to NAHC at nahc.ca.gov, and that will be also our comment email as well. So we are now moving into the UC NAGPRA draft policy. This is information and action item because I do have a recommended action for the committee, for the commission. The UC has been working on their advisory group or working with their advisory group to develop a UC-wide policy on NAGPRA and CalNAGPRA issues. The UC issued a final draft that could be available to the public on August 29th, 2019. Commissioners were provided a copy of the draft for their personal review the following week. UC is aware that you only take action as a commission and that you are subject to Bagley-Keene open meeting requirements, and so they are aware of our time constraints based on your meeting four times a year. I asked our Attorney General Rep, John Applebaum, to do a preliminary review of the policy and flag any issues he saw with it. He has created a grid, which is in your packet and should have been posted online as well. Of issues and concerns that he saw, I just want to make it clear that this is advisory only, so it's not your official position. This is just prepared so that you can better work through the policy. The Attorney General's initial analysis has been provided to you for your review. He's also here to walk you through any issues you have if you want to do that today. But given the complexity of the policy and the laws it deals with, I'm recommending that you form a subcommittee to work with the UC to provide recommendations, meet and confer, and get them what they need, given that they are very strictly operating under the statutory deadlines. Or at least that is what they have expressed. I've sent a letter to the UC indicating that we will need more time to be able to formulate our position, or the NAHC's position, I apologize, but that we'd like to set up a meeting to discuss preliminary flags and see if we can reach resolution. This would be with the subcommittee I'm recommending that you form today, and ideally the commission will be able to work with them to get a policy that better reflects the intent of the law. So I am recommending that you form that subcommittee. I've already reached out to get some initial meeting dates with the idea that the subcommittee would meet over a two-day initial period in November.
Can we silence our phones?
She's working. I'm
trying. Okay. Thank you.
I've already reached out to the UC, and they provided a number of dates. There is a two-day period that I think the subcommittee could make itself available to, should you form one, to work through some of these initial items. And where there are legal issues that can't be addressed, you'll have a better understanding of that. And where there are issues that it's more of a policy direction, you'll have a better understanding of that as well. And what final position you might want to take on that advisory. I just lost where I was. Oh, on the draft policy.
So we're on now, under the Executive Secretary's report, item number 4, UC NAGPRA policy update. Thank you, Christina. Those are the recommendations from the executive secretary. I do know that Mary, you sit on one of the work group for this, or the work group for UC.
Right. So I'm the vice chair for the University of California Office of the President's Native American Advisory Council. And that council has a subgroup that works specifically on the NAGPRA issue, CalNAGPRA, for the policy. I was not a member of that.
Wait. You're a member of the Native American UC group?
The advisory council, but not the subgroup.
But not the subgroup that worked on the policy. Okay, I got it straight. Sorry. So I was going to offer to have you, if you wanted to say comment about this. Do we want John to come up, and do you want to do anything, or are we going to? What's the commission's pleasure into? Moving into forming a subcommittee to deal with this.
I think we should have a subcommittee to deal specifically with it. If that's for the CalNAGPRA, I guess work in tandem. But before we discuss that, I was just wondering, Christina, can the commissioners receive, you had mentioned that CILS had identified issues with CalNAGPRA. Would we be able to review their report or memo regarding the ID issues so that we can look at that at the same time we're looking at this policy?
My concern with that is that it's attorney-client confidential work product, and that would have to be made public, would it? Can we share that?
If you do distribute it to the commissioners and it's deliberated upon, it would become a public record.
Okay.
It would be an informational attorney-client memo.
But there has to be a basis under Bagley.
Well, they're doing the CalNAGPRA regs for the commission. So whatever issues they've identified, they should be able to communicate with their client.
Those would be public.
So it would be a public document.
Right. You have to have a specified exception under Bagley-Keene to fall under, and your deliberations on the CalNAGPRA policies don't fall under any exception. Even though the advice is coming from counsel, you don't have pending litigation that would fall
right.
under.
And I think there's a way around this, because I don't think that CILS is contracted to communicate with the commissioners. I think they're contracted to communicate with the NHC as an agency, and that's through NHC's legal counsel or through whoever that we designate, which is a lawyer or staff person or Christina, and they're going to receive that, and then they're going to put it together for us in whatever form and fashion is the memo that we would go through if we, you know, then go into deliberations on these issues, right? Like,
correct.
That's probably how it normally works, right?
Correct.
Right, okay.
So it's not impossible, but it's also...
It's gonna get to us.
Yeah.
The information's going to get to us.
Correct. And then your deliberations then would be public, and any concerns raised would be public about this regs.
So I don't know if Commissioner Kiefer Lopez, if you're asking Lopez Kiefer, I'm sorry.
Lopez Kiefer.
I'm just going to call you Lopez then. Oh. okay. My fellow Luceno commissioner, what are you specifically asking for? Because then maybe we could figure out a way to do it. Because are you specifically asking for that information right now? Because I think all of that's going to come out when the people that are working on it, you know, start working on it, and we get opinions and start putting together the language.
Now, I reviewed John's memo. Thank you so much. I found it to be very thorough. It also identified a lot of potential conflicts between the two statutes, and I became curious if those were the same issues that were being identified by the, you know, agency we contracted with for the CalNAGPRA regs, or if they found other ones that maybe we didn't, that aren't addressed in this assessment. And I just would want to make sure that the commission is aware of everything. That's the only reason it popped in my head. Thank you.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Like, I don't know if folks appreciate what we're dealing with, but the commission is dealing with a situation where we need to promulgate regulations to go with CalNAGPRA now that we're responsible for implementing it, and we actually do have some requests before us to start implementation of CalNAGPRA. We cannot do that until we take some steps, and one of them is promulgating the regs. One of them is putting together this list of who is eligible to participate in the CalNAGPRA, which is why we did the listening session yesterday on the definition, because that's one of the issues that, you know, who is going to be eligible. So the commission, and we're under, so we've got that moving, that's the commission's obligation. Then we have a situation where there was a bill last year, can't remember the bill number, Assemblyman Gloria passed this bill that, or 2836, AB 2836, which put obligations on the UC to promulgate their own policy on repatriation, and that's in response to a couple of the campuses being egregiously behind in their repatriation efforts. So one of the issues is that UC is putting together a policy which is supposed to, I would think it would capture both the federal NAGPRA and the California NAGPRA, since UC is technically subject to the California NAGPRA. But as you can see, there is an issue with going ahead to implement the California NAGPRA. So they have drafted a policy that, in my opinion, is predominantly focused on the federal law and not the California law. And we're anticipating what our role is going to be, how that's going to affect us, whether it's going to affect, enable us or not enable us to do the work we need to do as the commission. So Commissioner Lopez-Kiefer is correct in saying that, you know, we need all this information because the regs overlap with the UC policy in some regard, and what we're doing is going to be affected by what UC does, and what we do is going to affect UC. UC may have to update this policy later if it gets approved. It's supposed to be approved in January. That's a statutory timeline that UC has, but our regs are not going to be done before January. So there may be, you know, a lot of shuffling back and forth with things. And I think that one of the utmost concerns of the commission is we want to make sure that we fulfill our obligations and duties correctly to the best of our ability under the statute as soon as possible. And so that's what we're trying to move forward with doing. So that's a quick explanation.
What I'd recommend you do, because of the level of complexity of this, and any of you in the audience, you're familiar with it, both the Fed NAGPRA has a lot of regulations that have already been promulgated. State, we have our own CalNAGPRA. There are areas where federal and state law aren't necessarily clear or could possibly conflict. It's very complex stuff because there may be remedies that can be done to avoid conflicts. where we can certainly argue to the UC that they don't, you know, there are areas where they can still comply with both statutes, and I suspect they're going to take a broader view and try to rely on the federal process. So what we want to do is have a subcommittee that can help work through those issues and do meet and confers. I think it's going to take a lot of meet and confers, frankly, because it's a really intricate issues, a lot of difficult legal issues, and a very dense policy. So my expectation would be that we're going to have to meet and confer with the UC. We really want their input because they may have some legitimate concerns as to how they would go about complying with both statutes, and we want to know what those concerns are, and we want to be able to see if we can implement CalNAGPRA to the fullest extent we possibly can. So that's kind of the process.
Right. I agree. And we're at the very beginning of this issue. So that's probably why I'm sorry if I sound a little disjointed in trying to explain this, but that's the crux of the issue, is that UC is going to rely on federal NAGPRA because there's already, you know, it's been in an effect since 1990. There's established regulations. There's, you know, precedent decisions by the committee on it, and they don't want to dive into the CalNAGPRA, but we want them to because they're subject to it. And the problem is that the commission just hasn't, we haven't been able to put together the guidance yet. So we're kind of like in a really, you know, chicken and egg sort of situation here where we want to keep moving forward. But it looks like there may be some, you know, back and forth between us and UC over the next probably year or more about all of this is what I'm foreseeing.
Well, they want to go much faster than that because they have a January deadline to enact their regulations.
Right.
And I think they're under tremendous pressure to meet that deadline. I don't know. I can't tell you if that's realistic or not, except to tell you that it's really intricate stuff and dense, and there will be a lot of back and forth between the commission and the UC, and before we can bring anything to you, because my expectation would be the subcommittee would eventually bring something to all of you to approve as your final comments to the policy. It may be a little ambitious to think that we can get that done by January, but...
Well,
just a point of clarification. So on this agenda item, we're just looking for a motion, if I'm correct, to go ahead and put together a subcommittee to work with
right.
this.
Right now, yes.
Because we're going over the history of this, and it's going to confuse a lot of people and put people to sleep.
I think it's necessary. I think it's necessary because this has been on the forefront of people out in the community, the UC policy. Like, there's been a lot of meetings recently. Everybody knows this is out for draft. It's out for tribal comment draft right now. So I think I think we needed to explain that basic background and what the commission's tie-in with it and the issues are.
Just for more information, the UC comment period ends November 15th. The tribes, I know in accordance with the statute, the AB 2836, the UC, University of California, sent the draft policy to all the tribes on the NHAC contact list. So if you haven't received it, it is on their website. I hope it's not our website as well. So if you have comments, please make sure you submit them. It's a friendly link they have. And you don't have to write out a letter or anything. It's simply online. You can provide your comments. And I would ask, respectfully request, if you do provide them comments, that you provide us your comments as well so that we know your thoughts on it. UC President Napolitano has been very supportive of... has been very supportive and has embraced repatriation as the policy for the University of California. So
the reason I was asking again for those issues is because I feel the commission in providing that comment letter and guidance to the UC, I just want to make sure that we're doing it in a forward way, because we have our own regs to do after this. So I just wanted to, we need to be aware of what the issues are so that we can address them fairly with the UC. Because like you said, we need to hear their concerns about regarding if they can comply with both statutes.
Thank you, Secretary Lopez-Kiefer. And just also, the proposal too is an attempt to work collaboratively with them, and then where there are outstanding issues where we may need to push back or to put something on the record, this commission will have the opportunity to vote on a final comment. The commission is required under the statute to provide comment on it. So that has to be done, and so this is an attempt to do it in the most collaborative way possible.
At this time, I'd like to make a motion that we have a subcommittee, appoint a subcommittee for the UC repatriation policy. I'd like to nominate myself and Laura Miranda. I don't know if I can nominate myself, but I just did.
I'll second it then.
Well, you guys are falling asleep, so.
I stand corrected.
Only Reggie.
Only Reginald. Only Reginald.
I'm just kidding. Okay, I have a motion. And a second. Who was the second? Ready. Okay. Okay. Touche. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, that passes unanimously. This will be the NAGPRA UC policy subcommittee. Well, I mean, it should probably technically be just repatriation UC policy, but because it's supposed to cover NAGPRA and CalNAGPRA, but... Oh, it is. Okay. It's called the Native American Cultural Affiliation and Repatriation Policy. That's what the UC is calling it. That's okay. Okay, that finishes item number four. We're going to move on to item number five.
Great. And so there are still two action items on the agenda. I know we have a commissioner that needs to jet. So we'll take this one, and then I'm going to propose doing elections before we get to the next one, if that's okay with everybody. So Palmdale Estates project update. I'm going to invite up Debbie Treadway to kind of start this, and then we'll invite up also the member, the community member that wanted an action item on the agenda.
Just real quick, 2016, there was some Native American remains teeth that were found on a project site in Alameda County. The project basically was over 2018. The property owner did not contact the most likely descendant to let them know. But once the most likely descendant, which is Kathy Perez, found out that the project was over with, she wanted to rebury the remains. At that point in time, she was informed that the teeth were lost. The commission has been working with the property owner through staff and our legal department to try to see if they could retrieve them. At this point in time, they have not found them. They were put, what they claimed, in a safe and secure location within a storage shed on the site. And then by the time that Ms. Perez found out it was time to rebury, the storage bin had been cleaned out and there were no human remains. And I'll invite Kathy up to for her, what she's requesting.
Okay, just a reminder, we are in a public open session, so anything you want to be confidential, probably don't say it. Just keep it to what's appropriate for public comment.
Okay.
Thank you for being here.
Okay. I think it's still morning, right?
Okay.
So, good morning, Executive Secretary and Commissioner and staff. I'm Chairwoman Catherine Perez. From the Northern Valleyoka tribe. Our tribe, which is also Ohlone, okay, was designated as the MLD for the Palmdale Estate Project, which is located in the city of Fremont, also known as Orisum, which is the the mission where my family comes from. They actually come off of that mission. I'm here again, okay, to ask the commission for assistance in resolving this case, okay, of the improper disposal of human remains. So as of April, as Debbie has mentioned, these remains have been missing, okay? I was notified that it was time to do the reburial, but evidently they've lost them. They've had plenty of time and opportunity to come up with these human remains. To date, we haven't heard a word, okay? So we have no idea where they're at, how they've been disposed of, okay? And so our tribe feels like that's disrespectful. It's my ancestors need to be put at rest, and we can't do that if we don't have them. Someone needs to be held responsible. So we're asking the commission to please, okay, do an investigation, okay? So I'm asking the commission to please do the investigation and see who or what can be done.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And you've submitted that request formally with staff, right?
Staff has been working on this since February of 19, sorry. we have been in correspondence with the archaeologist on site, the Native American monitor that was on site, the property owner. At the time, Terry Robinson, our legal counsel, was in contact with the property owner as well, and we have given them ample time. They have, according to the property owner, they have looked at the storage shed. They've checked with the contractors. They had sent some materials to a repository. They've checked there. According to at least what I have found, the last time we followed up with them was in August, and that was with Mr. Galvin, who was the monitor on site. And then I had heard I've heard correspondence from the archaeologist who was on site in October of 2019, and the remains, the teeth, have never been found.
Was there a police report filed?
Yes.
There's a police report filed?
Yes, there is. Uh-huh. I filed it with the city of Fremont.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So. I would say defer to our legal counsel. That's what I would normally do, because I'm not sure that this falls under the commission's purview of what we have jurisdiction over, if they were stolen or if it's an archaeologist that is mishandling. We'd need to look at the statutory, you know, constructs of to see if that fell under commission purview. But not to say that, you know, we're not going to help as much as we can and do what we can to help you. It sounds like maybe a mediation type of thing, you know, that we're kind of playing a mediator role here right now and trying to, like, resolve this dispute, because it sounds like that nobody's coming up with an answer, right?
Nobody's coming up with an answer, but what we have been able to do was work with the property owner to give them the opportunity to look at the places that he felt that they could possibly be. Because one of the things the property owner is saying, that before they cleaned out the storage bin, that the bag, they had put them in a bag. The bag was there, and now all of a sudden it's not there anymore. So what they've been doing is actually looking. We have been following up with the property owner. We have been in contact with, you know, multiple people on this to try to assist Kathy on trying to get these remains back.
Unfortunately, your story is not unique, actually. Like, a lot of us deal with the same thing of items going missing, including human remains. My tribe just went through a situation like that, and we couldn't find any legal basis to go after anybody for it. It was very heartbreaking. But the archaeologist is responsible for these items, probably contractually on the project. So I know that you guys probably already know that, and are that would be a responsibility of you know, sort of the applicant enforcing that and finding them. So thank you for being here.
So
do you have any comments, Commissioner?
So on what grounds was your case dismissed? I mean,
we didn't have a case. There was nothing we could do.
I mean, you couldn't hold anybody accountable
nope.
for the loss of your human remains, your nope. ancestors?
No. Because it's because they're under the law, which is unfortunate because it's not how tribal communities view these items, but they're viewed as property of the landowner. And so it's not something that we have a property claim to in that regard. So handling and treatment and all of that, unfortunately, there's not a statutory provision in the law that gives tribes a right to, you know, force any kind of treatment or handling in those situations. So, like, for example, we always write into contracts about how things will be stored, and it sounds like there was in a secured facility, but stuff happens. Like, we've had situations where things were stolen, we've had situations where things gone missing, and there's not a statutory a hook in there for us to file anything. It's unfortunate. There's no place in the law for that.
So are you saying then Native Americans are treated differently than human remains that might come up missing from a mortuary today?
No, you filed a police report.
Yes, I did.
So that's where you would go through is that process. But again, those remains are on the owner, the land of the property owner. So under the law, they're considered the property of the landowner. That's the unfortunate piece. And I can't give legal advice, so I'm sort of like, I feel like I don't want to go into that realm right now with you.
I just
know what I know from my experiences. And so the commission, for what we could do about this, mm-hmm. because you're appearing for us as the commission, I would have to defer to our legal authorities to tell us what we're statutorily permitted to do here.
So can I have the commission ask your legal counsel what the measures or steps that we can take?
That's what Debbie's doing. That, from my understanding, that's why I asked her if you had formally filed with her, because that's what they've done.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. So that's happening.
Okay.
Question.
So, commissioners, I think
any comments?
There has to be
from commissioner. There is, but it's
criminal. So the DA.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So I would have to go before the Department of Justice or
the district attorney's office. Yeah.
Was that
department.
Alameda?
So you filed a police report.
I did that. Yeah.
There's a statute. If you want to write this down.
Oh, I don't
here.
Have a.
Here you go.
Okay. You can let them know about Public Resources Code. Section 5097.
5097.
0.99. It does require a person who knowingly and willfully.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the.
And possesses items.
Mm-hmm.
It's a difficult standard, but it's up to the police and the district attorney to determine if that's been violated.
They should be automatically doing it, but usually when it's in within a project that's a CEQA project, it's not gonna fall under that code section because the knowingly and willfully is not gonna be triggered because they're allowed to handle these things.
Okay, thank you.
But thank you. Thank you for giving her that.
Did you have questions?
For John Applebaum?
I had a question.
Commissioners?
I just real quick one, since he has a statute out. Do you have the PRC
5097-98? You gotta go. 99 and 98 if you
want to look at it. I'll go ahead and pause because I think. Go ahead, Commissioner Atterbury.
Just clarification question. So this committee is here to help tribes. Select the most likely descendant and protect Native American cultural artifacts, whatever. Now, I'm hearing if somebody is doing a project and there's something discovered, and we went through with this was when they were putting all these bones from burial in trailers and all this, and I asked why, and the archaeologists, they want to study them. But same thing. But what I'm hearing and what confuses me is I'm hearing we can't, if somebody says, oh, they're lost, we lost them, we can't find them, then there's nothing we can do. That didn't make any sense to me. So if somebody could clarify, isn't there some sort of legal consequences?
Sam, do you want to come up?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, there's an unfortunate piece there.
Yeah, so to kind of just echo what John said, the kind of caveat that makes this a little bit difficult is that it has to be this knowing and willfully. So they would have to meet that standard to say that this was, it can't just be we lost them. They would have to show that there was a knowing and willful action.
So that there was an intent to actually destroy them.
Right.
So there is a recent case that one of my colleagues sent to me where a text message exchange between a project applicant, I don't know if you read this.
I see.
Yeah, a text message exchange between a project applicant and I think a contractor that was on site where human remains were found. And there was a text between them about them, and the landowner said something to the equivalent of get rid of them.
Right.
And that is what you need to show.
Right. Yeah, that's what something you need to show. It would be easier if we didn't have those or something along those lines. It would show the intent that they were trying to basically, you know, get rid of them. But any other, I was just telling Debbie, I've done a little bit of research on this as this situation has sort of unfolded. And it seems that the best recourse that unfortunately the commission can't really take, but is through civil litigation. And so just because the commission can't necessarily take action doesn't mean that no action can be taken. It's just that in terms of what the commission can take, it is quite limited, but that there are still plenty of options available to Chairwoman Perez and civil.
Well, there's not plenty of options. Not plenty of options.
They're very limited. Yeah, there are.
But they are options.
Yes, that's a better way of saying that. Yes. So, unfortunately, just with the law and the way that it's written now, the commission doesn't have a whole lot of leeway with it.
Again, just to comment, and again, that doesn't make any sense because the precedents we're setting here is not good.
I don't disagree.
We don't have a legal authority, though. We're not setting any precedent.
Right.
We're not setting any precedent.
If we're saying that there's nothing we could do, then we are setting a precedent.
Well,
other people would come along and say, well, we lost them. I'm sorry. And there's nothing you can do.
Jurisdictionally, the commission does not have authority. That is the local police department's authority under that one statute that the AG had read out. Mm-hmm. And a civil case is out in the state court, a civil suit about, you know, mm-hmm. There could be a contractual dispute as well if the archaeologist didn't handle the remains to his contract. But for the commission's purview, we have purview over deciding the MLD and various other things around that, but not the treat that, you know, not whether items themselves, you know, get lost or even get probably mishandled. That's another piece that we probably don't have purview over either. I don't know. We might be able to. But anyway, them being lost, we don't have an authority in our statutory powers and duties to bring any actions about that legally.
Thank you for that clarification. That's what I was looking for. I still worry about the precedents, but thank you.
I would like to have some type of legal analysis provided regarding the enforcement of the statute and the intent, because that is where
I think that Commissioner Miranda, Vice Chair Miranda, is stating, mm-hmm. but I would like to actually see the legal analysis
sure.
as a commissioner.
I think.
No, we can have John take a look at that, and is that acceptable? Do you take that on as your?
Yeah, I can take that on.
And we can.
Yeah, he'll work with Sam on what's already been done.
And yeah. I mean, I think this would be helpful, too, just to have on record, because since my tribe has gone through this twice in the last year, I mean, it's been really gnarly. And we just seeing the holes in the law, especially about treatment, mm-hmm. That tribes have no say legally into how these remains and associated items are handled and treated by during this process of the MLD process. That's a big deal. And so it would be nice to have this, because I think somewhere along the future, you know, tribes are going to want to sort of fill in those gaps if we can with some obligations.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sam. Are we done on that item? Okay, and then we're going to take out of order, Vice Chairwoman, you can take over if you'd like, but we're going to take out of order officer elections, as we have one of the commissioners needs to leave and we will lose quorum soon. So that is the last item before public comment on the agenda.
So we just finished number 5 under Executive Secretary's report. We're going to jump down to officer elections. Commissioner Pagling has to leave to catch a plane. So normally, when the last time we did this, we just sort of all agreed on positions among each ourselves, I think is what we did. I'm not really sure if I recall how to do that. Or are we nominating folks?
I think what you're doing.
I think what you're doing is basically filling the chairperson's spot, and then if you're taking away from another position, then you have to refill that position.
Okay.
I don't think what you're doing is re-election of everybody.
Okay. So right now in front of us we have since Commissioner Chairman Ramos left us for the assembly. We have that chair position to fill.
So we'll take nominations now.
Nominate Laura Miranda.
I accept the nomination. Is that a motion? Do I hear a second? I'm not going to get a second. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
You're supposed to do
it. Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you. Okay, why don't we...
we'll just go backward. So any further nominations? Nominations are closed then, so we are going to do a vote. All in favor of appointing Vice Chairwoman Laura Miranda to the chairperson position, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Vice Chairwoman Miranda is now Chairwoman Miranda. We now have a vacancy for Vice Chairperson.
Thank you. You all were very enthusiastic about that. Thank you.
Yay.
I don't know what that means, but I'm here. Okay. Thank you. Sincerely, thank you. Okay, Commissioner Pagling.
We're not done yet.
Oh, we're not done?
We now have a vacancy for the vice chair.
Right.
So do we have nominations for vice chair?
I nominate Commissioner Pagling.
Are there further nominations? Nominations are closed. All in favor of appointing Commissioner Pagling to be vice chairperson of the Native American Heritage Commission, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Commissioner Pagling is now Vice Chairperson Pagling. Congratulations. And now we're done with elections.
Parliamentarian.
Oh, we're not?
Parliamentarian is now vacant.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know we had that many.
I do.
For those that can't hear Debbie, you now appoint a parliamentarian under the bylaws.
Who doesn't have a position? Commissioner McKay? Commissioner Atterbury, do you have positions?
Sure.
Okay, Commissioner Atterbury.
And now we're done? Now we're done. Thank you, commissioners.
Hi. Thank you. Okay.
So we will now go back to the tribal advisor update, which is an information item. I'm just going to give you a quick overview of some of the things that are going on. We had Native American Day on September 27th. I don't know what day it is ever. And so this was the largest celebration that we've had. We had 40 vendors, which the Native American Heritage Commission staff staffed a lot of the Tribal Leaders Forum in the Native American Day and did an amazing job. Sam was running all over the place. Sorry, Samantha Seipert was running all over the place, holding ground and making sure everybody was doing what they needed to do and not creating too much chaos beyond normal Native American Day activities. We had for the first time a cultural heritage pavilion that showcased all cultural California Native practitioners, and that was hugely successful. We are going to start rotating those practitioners so that we can highlight more of the diversity of California Native practices. We had the governor opened the event with a proclamation, which I can read if you're interested. You can also find it on his website. And then Assemblymember Ramos was there, and he also sponsored the event and sponsored the floor acknowledgments in the legislature. We had Wes Studi attended, which was really great. He was very gracious and gave us a lot of his time. And he is about to receive the first Honorary Academy Award, the first Oscar for a Native American actor, I think in 2 days, or maybe it's today. Again, I never know what day it is. And then we also had an extremely successful license plate launch that Samantha is going to talk about a little bit later on the agenda. This Monday was the first time a California governor has issued a proclamation acknowledging Indigenous Peoples Day. That is also available on his website. And I can read that if people are interested as well. And so that is history and is really amazing. And I am very proud of my boss right now. Then I also wanted to highlight a few things that people can get engaged in. We do have tribal directories available for order for those who are interested. They showcase all of the tribes throughout California and how to get in contact with them. And they also have some really interesting background information on each of the tribes. So if you are interested in that, please email us at the NHC email. And then the California Indian Heritage Center Task Force is still accepting nominations until October 31st. You can get more information on that at cihc@parks.ca.gov. And that task force was established last year under Executive Order B-6018 by Governor Brown to refresh the California Indian Heritage Center project to move forward and be basically the directing body for that project. I am going to now show you on my website where you can put in input for the Truth and Healing Council. We're still in consultation mode, and so we're accepting a lot of comments and trying to figure out how to create a body that is most representative of the diversity of California natives. Okay, so if you see on my website, there's a Truth and Healing with some hands holding each other, because that's the idea. And if you could click on that, actually, the Truth and Healing icon at the top. It has a basic summary of what the council is supposed to do. And then if you scroll down, there is a fillable form where you can submit your answers. And just so you're aware, that formatting for the phone number is non-negotiable, and your answer won't go through if you don't do it just dash, dash, dash. So if you're having trouble, that's probably the issue. But so we're still in this pretty extensive information gathering mode, but with the idea that we want to get something up and running in early of next year, so January or February. And the idea that it's going to be largely an interpretive process, given that it's so kind of new and it's never been done on this scale before, and we want to make sure that it's reflective of both the whole narrative of what happened here, but also serves as a space for real healing and a real place where Native peoples can start kind of peeling away at some of the things that we've carried for so long. So it's fairly ambitious. And so if you are interested and you have thoughts, please submit them on my website. Or you can also mail them to the governor's office and they'll come to me. And then the last thing is the Tribal Nation Grant Fund. And so if you go to tngf.ca.gov, you'll see some nice coastal redwoods. And we have posted the Equal Distribution Grant, if you want to click through to that. And so that was released and open for applications for tribes that are eligible for the Revenue Sharing Trust Fund. That is limited gaming, which is 350 Vegas-style devices or fewer. And non-gaming tribes, it has to be a tribal applicant. Those are the only applicants that are eligible. The fund itself is available for its limitations are that it can't be used for per capita distributions in any shape or form. So that includes general welfare, direct distributions to tribes, to tribal members. But also it cannot be used for anything that has to do with gaming, which the panel has interpreted as anything that actually houses gaming devices. And so the initial approved grant amount is $400,000 per eligible tribe. We have guidelines and an application form that you can submit online. If you need to do it offline, we can also provide that. And you can also email. We prefer doing the online application method because it goes straight into the... If you press step one, it'll show you how to register. You can see what your eligibility is. But I encourage you all, if you are viewing and you are a Revenue Sharing Trust Fund eligible tribe, to submit that application. That is open until November 29th, and it's designed to be the to collect the information, only the information that's required as a baseline under the statute. And so every single item that is asked for is actually required. And if you don't submit something that's required, it's illegal. So we please submit a complete application, but the idea is that it shouldn't be overly burdensome for anyone. I'll be posting a few examples of what a complete application looks like in the next week or so. But again, if there are questions, we have staff at the Gambling Control Commission that can provide technical assistance as well. Any questions? Okay. So now we have some informational presentations. So if Samantha Cyprick could come up and walk us through the license plate. Also, I know you're all aware, Commission, but Samantha, this is basically the all due to the hard work of Samantha. All of the everything that you're seeing all over social media has been at her direction. So she's done a really great job on this.
So we're on to informational item number one on the agenda.
We are now solidly into the afternoon. So good afternoon, Chairwoman Miranda, Executive Secretary Snyder, Commissioners, Tribal Leaders, and our staff. Thank you so much for the opportunity to present. Like Executive Secretary Snyder was saying, this has been quite a process, but we are very excited to announce it is now live. So the goal of this is to kind of catch everyone up on this process, where we're at, a little bit of where we've been, and hopefully where we're going. So a little bit about the program. The goal of this program is to generate sustainable recurring funding for the NAHC so that we improve our ability to preserve and protect California Native American cultural resources. After the initial program fees are paid to DMV, the revenues will pay for these following programs. And these programs, for anyone who's not aware, the commission was presented with a variety of options. We also did a survey for the tribal community to see where they would like this money to go. And so these are the programs that were overwhelmingly supported by tribal communities and then ultimately voted into place by the NAHC, by the commissioners. So it's to implement CalNAGPRA, to further our legal clinics and internship programs, training programs for tribes and government agencies on the laws that are in place to protect cultural resources, a legal defense fund to enforce state laws if there is a situation where the Department of Justice is for some reason conflicted out of representing us, then we would have the ability to hire outside counsel to represent us, and then land conservancy purchases to protect Native American cultural resources. It took many years of effort to get here. If you guys are regular attendees, or obviously our commissioners are regular attendees of the, we've been talking about this for a very long time. So we've done a fair amount of, like I said previously, market research to figure out what our tribal community wanted to see both on the plate and then also what they wanted to see the plate funds used for. And then there was a lot of collaboration, obviously, with DMV and CHP to get us to where we are today within the plate design and the plate program. And then building the process to sell the plate. So we have to obviously have a website and credit card processing and a bank account. So it's a very thorough process that we had to go through to prepare for that. And then the ultimate preparing to launch a program with all of our PR campaign, all of the printed materials, all of the website, Facebook, all of that. So we'll get into that a little bit more. So the Executive Secretary Snyder said, we'll officially launch at Native American Day on September 27th. And the website, protectnativeculture.com, is live and accepting orders. I did want to note, we have had some questions about going onto DMV's website and why aren't we there. And that is because this program is still in a pre-order process. So basically the way that it works is we have to get 7,500 people to pre-order. So that means giving us their money before this plate actually becomes an official plate program that goes through the DMV. So once we hit that 7,500 mark, then we inform DMV, and then we give that money to them, and then the plate actually goes into production. So DMV has already approved the program, approved the plate, CHP has approved the plate, but we have to get to that 7,500 mark. We have been collecting interest. We had an email form on our website for quite some time. That does not count as a pre-order. We actually have to get 7,500 people to complete an order to go there. So we've had a little bit of confusion of people saying, oh, I signed up a couple of years ago. That was just informational to let you know about the program, but that does not count towards our 7,500 mark. So this is the video that we produced. Are we good on sound? Okay.
Cultural resources, basically everything from the ground to the sky. It's all the plants, rocks, water. They're what allow us to survive in this world. All Californians live on Indian land. You came and lived here, and it was here because people took care of it before you. And so now that's part of your history, and you should care just as much. It takes an active effort to protect stuff. We have to look at the whole picture, because everything affects everything else. Join us in protecting Native culture and help support the Native American Heritage Commission, because they support all of the tribes of California.
So that is the 1 minute long video that we have been sharing via social media. And then we are in the process of producing a longer video with some interviews from various tribal leaders And that will kind of explain a little, like flesh out a little bit more about what the NAHB, she does have a little bit more information, but that's a 1 minute long video that the purpose of it is to share on social media. That's for anyone who's not aware, that's the limit of a video length that you can share easily via Instagram or Facebook. And then hopefully drive traffic to the website, and then they can find out more about the NAHB and what we do. So like I said, we really need your help to get to 7,500 pre-orders, or all of this work will sort of be for naught. There's a few different ways you can help. Obviously, the first one and probably the most important is actually buying the plate. So you buy your plate at protectnativeculture.com. It has to be linked to a vehicle in California. So you can't just buy them to put up on your wall or anything like that. It has to be an actual vehicle in California. It can be a car, a truck, a trailer, or also a motorcycle. The big thing and the thing that we've discussed a lot is that we need tribes or other entities to buy these in bulk. So that's something in terms of putting them on your vehicle fleets, things of that nature. That's really how we're going to get to 7,500. In the research I've done and talking to other groups that have successful special interest plate campaigns, they didn't get there one plate at a time. One of the fastest ones I spoke to was actually the agriculture plate, and that was because they went out to all of the large farms. All of the farms purchased plates for all of their vehicles. They got there very quickly. The breast cancer plate, which you would think has such an audience, it took quite a while because they didn't have any natural large groups to purchase. So they really were going one at a time, and that actually took quite a bit of time for them. So we can help with bulk orders. You can do it through the website, but if a tribe needs help, please reach out and contact me, and we can walk you through the process or give you some paperwork to even just do paper orders. Asking your partners and vendors to buy plates for their vehicles. You can gift the plate to someone else as long as you have their current license plate number. You can give it as a gift. And then you can also sponsor it for someone else. And then following the 7,500, we have to keep 7,500. So once you get the plate, it's important that you can commit to renewing it as well. So I just wanted to walk everyone through our website quickly. This is linked through the NAHB site, but we do have a completely separate website, protectnativeculture.com. So when you come here, you see the welcome. Do I have a pointer? And then maybe, yeah, oh, it's not very dark. You click on buy plate, or you can scroll down and you'll see these selections. So like I said, there's the personalized motorcycle, the sequential, so that's just the random numbers. A personalized auto truck or trailer, and then a sequential auto truck or trailer. The personalized plates are $106. The sequential plates are $53. So if you were to select a sequential auto truck or trailer, this is the website you will see. It notes some of the rules that we've already gone over and then asks you to select if it's a gift or not. So hypothetically, if I was buying a plate, I would enter in my name as it appears on your car registration, your current license plate. And then if you are purchasing for an auto or a truck, you have two plates. For a trailer, obviously, you just have one. And then it would bring you next to this site or this page that asks you to review all of your information. And then you just click proceed to checkout down at the bottom. If you are selecting a personalized plate, there's a little bit more you have to do. So you are only allowed 6 characters because the basket image takes up 1 character. And then there's just the instructions on how to fill out the form. So you can make up to 3 choices. You do have to select, you do have to say what the meaning is for each choice. And so, for example, if I wanted to select M. Maidu, because I'm Mountain Maidu, I would put that in, and then it can go through the descriptions. At the bottom, there is an acknowledgement, and it's something that we do like to make clear to everyone. Simply filling out this form and submitting payment does not reserve any of your personalizations. So if you have your heart set on a personalization, you would want to go onto the DMV website, get a standard personalized plate now, and then transfer that once our plate launches. So that's kind of, in plain terms, what the acknowledgement says, because we don't want anyone to kind of have a plate stolen from underneath them in this process. You would come down, you would just double check your work, and then for the personalized plate, you have to select where you're going to pick up your plate. So if you're exchanging a sequential plate for a personalized plate, you have to actually exchange them either at a DMV office or a AAA office. So you just select which office you would like to pick those up from. And then you would proceed here to this order form either way. So then this is all of your billing details. It goes through the license plate number that you're replacing with your new plate. And then you can have the option of either selecting credit payment here on the right-hand side, or you can also pay by check. If you choose check, then you submit the check directly to the office of the NAHC. Either way, there's also a couple of acknowledgments that we're asking people to make, which is simply we have to get to 7,500 before these plates go into production. So we don't want anyone to give us their money and then expect that they're getting a license plate in a week or two. We have to get to that number first, so we just want everyone to be aware of that. And then asking if you want to be communicated with by email. And then you would just click place order. And then you would get this website that says order received. And then that's how you know it's completed. I get an email. The NAHC gets an email. Our credit card processors get an email. And so, and that's then you're added to our list. So until you see that order received, then you need to keep going. If you are after you buy your plate and you would like to help further, you can also help us on social media. So these are also on our website, but these are all of the different social media handles that we have for the NAHC and for the plate. We're asking people to share your video. If you've made a purchase, you know, you can take a screenshot of your purchase. Anything that kind of helps drive awareness to this, we really appreciate. We also, if you are in control of your tribe's social media channels or any other appropriate organization's social media channels, we're asking that people share this. And then we also have a digital toolkit that people can use. So if you want more information, you can reach out to me directly, and we can get you some digital information as well. We are also asking that people help distribute printed material. So right here in front, we have this Film Corps poster with pamphlets in it. We're asking that any tribal entity, obviously larger ones like casinos, but any other business entity that you have, your tribal offices, if you can place one of these in a high traffic area, we would really appreciate it. And so we can send those out to you. We have them packaged and ready to go. And then the other important thing is that if you are one of the first 1,000 plate purchasers, we're calling it the Heritage Circle. And so that will give you recognition on protectnativeculture.com, recognition in our press outreach. And then you're also getting this license plate holder that says Heritage Circle, and then this air freshener that has the basket image from the plate, and it's shaped like California, if you can't see it. And it's also custom scented to smell like sage, which I had to work really hard to do, but it worked out well in the end. And so so we are very excited about that. And commissioners, I have some of those for you. It was a fun process. So just a quick FAQ. Most of this has already been covered. So sequential plates are $53. Vanity plates are $106. You must be registered just to a California vehicle. You don't have to be Native American to buy the plate. We want to make that very clear. That's why the tagline of Protect Native Culture was selected, was that we wanted to make it clear that it's for anyone who's interested in helping protect Native culture. It's not necessarily just limited to Native people. And we are now asking our tribal leadership and our commissioners to help us with that. And so I just also wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you to a few people who have made this process happen. Assemblymember Ramos, who is our former chairman, graciously is one of the people that we've interviewed in for our longer video. He's also been a great promoter of the process. Christina Snyder, both in her capacity as executive secretary and as tribal advisor. The Tule River Tribe, who it is their basket image that's on the license plate, and they graciously licensed that to us in perpetuity for free. And so we are very, very thankful to them for that. Michael Bellavita and his staff at HelpGood, who is helping us with the PR portion of this. Chris Vincenti, who did all of the website and everything, because that is not my wheelhouse, and he has been incredibly helpful. Tazba Chavez and David Tellis, who are the production team behind the video that you just watched and will also be producing the longer video. Tazba is Bishop Paiute, and David is from the Wanyanyo in Antigua, I believe, tribes. Kathy Bancroft from Lone Pine did the voiceover for the video. And then Curtis Corona is the designer of the plate. Then I also just wanted to say thank you to the NAHC Commission and their staff, and then the California State Lands Commissioners as well. So if anyone has any questions, I would like to certainly take those now. Yes?
We do have a question.
Okay.
And this is Michael.
Yes, Michael Bohorkas, and is part of the general public. Do you have one that's designed that'll work for the handicap?
So you can use this plate for the handicap, but you would have to then use a disabled placard on your.
So you don't have one that would be like a permanent.
They won't design. They won't let you combine them. So we can't combine it with any other special interest or with the disabled plate. You would have to transfer to the placard. Unfortunately,
okay. Thank you.
Sorry about that. Any other questions? Okay, so, I'm sorry, yes.
How many have been ordered so far?
Right now we're at about 300 individual orders, and then we have commitment from other tribes that will bring us right to about 10% of our goal. So we're good progress. We're only in this about, or I guess we're right at 4 weeks now. So we're happy with our progress so far. We're still doing a lot of community outreach, and especially a lot of tribal outreach, which is where we're hoping to keep building those numbers. So I do have the sample plates here. So this is the native plate that we're using kind of, as you can see, in all of our marketing. And then this is not because my name is Sam. This is what they do for all of the sample plates. So this is the sample, just kind of the sample sequential plate, and then this is the sample sequential motorcycle plate. So the motorcycle plate's exactly the same, but you do lose the Protect Native Culture tagline because they won't let you put a tagline on the motorcycle plate. So if anyone is interested, if any tribal leaders are here, we do have some extra marketing materials. If you'd like to take those with you today, we'd be more than happy to give them to you. Also, if you have any ideas of good community events that we should be doing outreach at, we just attended the LA Indigenous Peoples Day celebration last weekend, had some really great feedback there, took some orders there. So we're really looking to go out into the community and encourage people to order. And then we also just got word 2 days ago from News from Native California that they're going to be doing, including a piece about the plate in their upcoming publication. And then we'll also have an order form in the magazine as well. For anyone who maybe doesn't have internet capabilities, they can still order that way. So thank you so much. And
Real quick, what's the deadline?
So our deadline to receive 7,500 orders is November 2020. So we have a little over a year. And so we are hopeful that we can get there before that. The faster we get there, then the faster they go into production. And but that's our ultimate deadline. So one way or the other, by November, it either launches or it doesn't.
I just want to express my profound gratitude to you. All the hours you put in, and you've done an amazing job. Seeing the presentation was very good, and thank you for sharing the video. I've done my part and shared it on social media, but thank you.
Yeah, we've been really fortunate. We've had really great interaction so far on social media. That video's been viewed 45,000 times already. We have, I think, about 1,500 people that like the NAHC on our Facebook page, and we're getting really great engagement. So we're excited. We think we're doing, we have a really solid start. So we just need to get everyone to place those orders, and we'll go from there. So anything else?
Okay. Any other questions, comments? Thank you so much, Sam.
Thank you. And if anyone wants to take pictures with these and share them to their social media today, that would be great. And commissioners, before you guys leave, if I could get a picture to include with the News from Native California article, we would appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. All right. We're now
Still under informational, we're on item number 2, Digital Atlas of California Indians. This is an informational item. Do we have a presenter?
Right.
Oh.
Yes, right here.
Yes. Hi. Jason, hi.
You need...
Oh,
no, you're fine. Go ahead.
Yeah, so just as background, while Jason walks up, this is a project that the Native American Heritage Commission received a grant on, and we're contracting with Jason to create and produce a digital atlas of California Native peoples. So we invite him here pretty much every meeting to give us an update on how that's going.
Hi, thank you. Thank you so much, Executive Secretary Snyder. Thanks to the commissioners for bringing me back here. This is the third time I've presented on the Atlas at this venue. And I am going to keep it a little bit brief this time. I think I gave an overview at the April meeting that everybody can still see. It's still posted online in the archives for these the series of meetings. And an update also at the last meeting, I guess, a couple, 3 months ago. I encourage people to go back and look at those to get an overall view of the project, the ideas behind it, kind of where it came from. I'm not going to reiterate that today, understanding that we're a little bit late in the day already. What I do want to do today, very important, is to talk about a change in plans. And this change in plans really came from going out there. I've been, as I think a lot of you know, I've been going around the state with the Office of Historic Preservation. Jesse and Janon here today to present next after me. Also just generally going out, any tribe that wants me to come visit, come talk to them, I will come no matter where you are. So over the course of that, obviously people have raised different concerns about the project, but the biggest concern of all is that it is moving too fast. And the reason why it's moving too fast is because the way I originally planned the project, and I take complete responsibility for this, I was hoping to create cultural exhibits on the level of the cultural affiliation. Those are the 60 cultural affiliations that you'll see in the NAHC directory, affiliations like Luceño, like Pomo, like Patwin, for which each of these affiliations, not every single one of them, but there are generally multiple tribes within each of these cultures, and then there are also many tribes that have multiple cultural affiliations. So this was going to be a really complicated process to figure out what we could put on a page for each of those cultural affiliations. And I'm going to give credit to Chris Neho from the Apala tribe, really, really smart guy who had a really simple idea to get around this, which is give every tribe their own page. And that's what I'm going to do. And that means anybody who's on the NAHC contact list, federally recognized, state recognized, you have the option to have your very own page in the Atlas that your tribe will have complete control over the content. And there are a few very great things about this change from a lot of people's perspective, from my perspective, from a lot of tribes' perspectives that I've talked to. But the main thing is that rather than needing to get materials from you very, very shortly, I've been saying mid-November, next month, that this can actually be an ongoing process that I'll be able to accept materials from tribes until this time next year. Let's say around Halloween 2020, that would be the last opportunity for somebody to submit material that could then be included in the product that will go online as planned at the end of 2020 on the NAHC website. So that gives everybody a lot more breathing room and a lot more time, and it also gives you much more control over what you as a tribe will decide to display, not display. You don't, obviously this is not mandatory, nobody has to participate at all. And even if you choose not to submit materials, you will have the option to have your directory information displayed so that people who wanted more information could contact you instead of going through displaying the Atlas. So that's really the main thing that I wanted to share today. I think for some people, I know for some people here, it's going to be something of a relief that we're not trying to put this together, and also that we're not going to have a consultation process in which tribes have to come to an agreement over, what materials would best represent their culture. In this case, tribes, in a sense, have sovereignty over their page in the Atlas. You can show whatever you like. So that's the change of plan. That's what I really wanted to report today. And I think that the whole thing is going to go much more smoothly and also be a much more representative product, showing not just the past or the history or the anthropology, but also Indian country today in its own terms, which I think is very important. I guess I could report out a couple of nice things that have happened recently. I recently presented to the executive team of the Resources Agency, Wade Crowfoot, the secretary, and his folks, and they were very, very supportive. They're planning on, continuing to support this project. Ongoing support from state parks has been very valuable for me. I've been humbled. I've been impressed. I've been awed by my experiences so far getting out there in Indian country, visiting people where they live, listening to histories, seeing some of the cultural resources that are being preserved. I hope to do a lot more of that. If you have questions, if anybody has any questions, I encourage not just to call me, but invite me. I don't show up anywhere uninvited, so you do have to invite me. But I will come and visit you no matter where you are, no matter who you are in the state, because I want to learn and I want to make this Atlas as representative of the people today, of the constituents for this project, as it possibly can be. So that's really all I have to say today. Once again, I encourage you to go back. If this is sort of an unfamiliar project to you at this point, look at the materials that are archived on the CalSPAN for NAHC. Back in the April meeting, I gave a longer overview of the project. Please reach out. I look forward to working with many, hopefully all of you. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions, commissioners?
No, I just wanted to commend you for all of your activities up and down the state. I know members from my tribe attended your presentation and the SHPO's presentation at Paula. So, and they were very excited about what you guys are proposing. So I know our tribal council's already met on it. So thank you.
That's great to hear. That's great to hear. Thank you so much, Commissioner Kiefer. Lopez Kiefer. We're all doing this to you
get
today, aren't
straight.
We?
Straight.
Well,
I was a Lopez before I was a Kiefer.
So, quick question.
Okay. Commissioner Atterbury.
Do we have maybe a representative from our tribe get a hold of you if we want to have input on what's going to go into Atlas for our tribe?
Yeah, absolutely. Have somebody reach out to me. I've talked to SHPOs. I've talked to council members. I've talked to chairs in the case of some of the smaller tribes. Anybody who works for the tribe or is a citizen or is empowered in any way to represent the tribe, they can talk to me. And once again, I don't want to say that what's Jason looking for? It's what do you want to show? I don't have control of this. I'm not a representative or a constituent of any of the tribes or cultures that are being represented. It's your decision. What I am going to offer, though, is assistance. If you need any assistance getting materials ready to be posted online, whatever that means, that might mean recording sound, or it might mean taking video, taking high-quality digital pictures. I've already done, actually, the thing that actually touches my heart the most that's happened so far is that I've actually been able to create digital versions of old cassette tapes that are deteriorating with songs from that were recorded from the 40s to the 70s. for one of the tribes I've been working with. So that kind of thing I'm completely available for. I will come to you. I'll bring equipment. Parks has a lot of good stuff. Don't think of this as what's Professor McCannell looking for. Not even Professor McCannell. That's my dad's name. But what do you want the public to see when they're looking? You have a portal now. It'll be with the state. What would you like the public to see when they're interacting with that portal? Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Jason.
Dr. Jason, thank you. If there's nothing else, I'm happy to step down now.
Are there getting comfortable up there?
What is it?
Getting comfortable up there.
It is actually more comfortable than the chairs at my height, but
Okay. So we're moving now. We're on to item number 3, California Mission Trail. And this is the State Historic Preservation Office. We have Julianne on the agenda, but she's not here today, so I'm assuming she sent representatives.
Yes. I'm substituting for her. I hope you don't mind me standing down here. I'm a little bit short for that podium, and this way I can talk to you and you folks as well. My name is Janon Saunders. I'm the Deputy State Historic Preservation Officer. I'm also the Tribal Liaison for the California Office of Historic Preservation. Julianne Polanco is very sorry she couldn't be here today. She's actually out of the country in Scotland right now at a climate heritage mobilization event where the state of California will be signing an MOU with the country of Scotland to work on climate change and cultural resources issues together. So it's a very exciting proposal. I did want to say that if you were interested in having us come back maybe next year to one of your meetings to present progress on this project, Julie can get it on her calendar and plan to be here for that. So as some of you may be aware, the last year the California Office of Historic Preservation applied for and received an underrepresented communities grant from the National Park Service to prepare what's known as a historic properties context statement on the Native American experience in the California mission system and to update one National Register nomination for a mission property based upon that context statement. Of the 21 missions that lie within the California borders, 17 are already on the National Register of Historic Places, and 9 of those are National Historic Landmarks, which is a higher level of designation. And although it is without question that the story of the Spanish intervention into what is now modern-day California through the establishment of the mission system is known and acknowledged, unfortunately, the contributions and experiences of the Native Americans are not well represented, if at all, in many, if not most, of the National Register nomination forms that have been prepared for mission properties. I think a large part of that is because those nomination forms were prepared in the 1960s and the 1970s when, unfortunately, we didn't have the same view of being inclusive of history and the peoples of all the stories involved in a property as we do now. And so our feeling is that it's very important to go back and update those nomination forms, even though those properties are on the National Register, update those forms to reflect the entirety of the history that those places represent. And that's what this project is all about. Right now, there is not one comprehensive document that covers the entirety of the California mission system within the context of the National Register of Historic Places that talks about the Native American experience within that mission, within the system. So creating such a document would not only help to understand the breadth and depth of these very important stories, but it would very, very importantly bring parity to the stories and contributions and struggle faced by the Native Americans within the mission system. Our objectives for this project are to increase the number of National Register nominations related to the California mission system that include information about Native American contributions to and effects on the system. So let me tell you just briefly what a historic properties context statement is, because most people outside of sort of the preservation world can't really think about what that looks like. And we do have one sample. Did you give them the sample of the Latinos? A couple of years ago, we prepared a statewide historic properties context statement on properties associated with Latinos in 20th century California. And so we have a sample that we can share with you to kind of give you an idea of what a historic properties context statement looks like. Basically, it's the foundation for making decisions about the identification, evaluation, registration, and treatment of historic properties. You have to examine historic properties, historic resources within a historic context, or sometimes within multiple contexts, in order to understand their significance. It gives you a perspective. Otherwise, you're just looking at a property sort of all by itself in isolation, and it's hard to figure out how significant that property is until you look at the larger context within which that property exists and what it represents. So a context statement is an organizing structure for grouping information about historic properties that share a common theme, place, or time. The major sections of a historic properties context statement are the historical background and themes discussion. That's the big part of the statement document. And also an analysis of property types that best represent those themes. It also talks about character defining features that those property types should have in order to best represent those themes that exist within the context. They also generally have a substantial bibliography, which can be very useful for future researchers. And that's often a lot of students will go to bibliographies of historic properties context statements because they're nice and full of a lot of information that they can tap into for school projects and things like that. Context statements that are written for purposes of the National Register of Historic Places, which is what we'll be doing, are called multiple property submissions, or MPSs. Sometimes you'll hear people refer to them. And they're done on a specific form called a multiple property documentation form. So you'll sometimes hear us talk about MPDFs as well. And when an MPS or an MPDF is approved by the keeper of the National Register, who was a staff person of the National Park Service in Washington, D.C., it streamlines the process to nominate individual properties associated with that context because it allows people to nominate a property, describe the property, but they don't have to do the rather laborious work of developing the context for that property because that context has already been developed. So it makes it much easier to nominate properties to the National Register when you nominate them under cover of an MPDF, of a historic properties context statement. It also makes it easier to update them as well. So our hope is that this project will lead to updating specific nomination forms for properties associated with the mission system to include the Native American experience so future readers and researchers have that information available to them. And we're also hoping that it can facilitate the preparation of nominations for new properties that have not yet been listed on the National Register. And we know that there are a lot of properties associated with the mission system that have not been nominated to the National Register. The focus in the 1960s and the 1970s was on the mission churches, as you might imagine. Well, there are a lot of mission-associated properties that haven't gone through that nomination process because they weren't sort of the big iconic mission churches that people were thinking of in the 1960s and 1970s. So our hope is that we'll also see a lot of new nominations come under cover of the context statement when it's written. Ultimately, too, we hope that the context statement will be both an information source in and of itself and a vehicle for updating and preparing new National Register nominations. As you can see, it's quite a substantial document that can be used by people for any number of research things. It's also an interesting read. And although the multiple property documentation form for the National Register is a little bit boring to look at, we always take our context statements and design them so that they're more inviting to readers. We use images, we use interesting graphics, things that will make people want to pick up and read it. Additionally, as part of this project, we're going to be updating the National Historic Landmark nomination for La Purísima Mission, and we'll be working very closely with the National Park Service on that update. One of the requirements for the grant program that we went through to get the funding for this project is that it has to result in a new or an update of an existing nomination. So in addition to the context statement, we knew we were going to have to update one nomination or prepare something new. And La Purísima Mission was a good one because it's currently going through the National Historic Landmark update process anyway, so it's easy for us to tie into that. It's also owned by the state of California, so we don't have to take on the Catholic Church in terms of doing that update. So we'll be working closely with California State Parks, who owns that property as well. We just finished a series of three listening sessions, as Jason referred to, in various parts of the state to talk with tribes about the project, provide them with information about it, and get input as we begin the project. That followed on the heels of sending formal letters to the chairs of all of the tribes on the NHC list who expressed an interest in counties where the mission system passed through. So not just counties where there actually is a mission, but looking at the whole trail, basically, and including all of those tribes. And those are the tribes we will continue to communicate with as we go forward on the project. We'll be putting out an RFP, request for proposals, to hire a consultant, do the research and writing work that we need to do this project. And that consultant will be very closely guided by both our office and an advisory committee of tribal representatives that we want to pull together for this project. And unlike past projects like this that we've undertaken where we've tried to limit the size of the advisory committee, in this one we are making it open to anyone who would like to serve on the advisory committee. And in fact, coming out of the listening sessions, one recommendation was the potential for creating smaller advisory committees, either maybe geographically or theme-based, to work on specific aspects of the context statement as well as the larger group working on it. The current deadline for the project is December 31st, 2020, but we're considering how realistic that deadline is and what we can actually get accomplished by that date. We're also talking to the National Park Service about whether we can extend that out or what we can do by that date to meet the terms of the grant, but keep the project going as long as is needed to really get the input that we need to provide the time that is needed to develop the context and to talk about what we know are difficult and going to be at times uncomfortable stories. This is, you know, we realize that this is not a fun story to tell, but it's an important story to tell and something that needs to be a part of the record or that we feel needs to be a part of the record. We want to be as flexible as possible so that the project is able to meet the needs of the grant and of the Native American Advisory Committee. And I do want to close with this. As we've expressed all along, we're managing this project as a means to allow Native Americans in California to share their experiences and ideas. But ultimately, it's their story. It's your story to tell. We're just helping to manage and facilitate the telling of that story. And ultimately, if we go through this process and we find that people don't want to share these stories and don't want to tell the story, then that's okay too. But we wanted to provide that vehicle to do that. I should mention the grant is $41,000, but we're actually adding in an additional $80,000 of funding from our office because we have salary savings this year as well. So we were able to really make it a very robust contract to be able to hopefully get a very good contractor in place to be able to work on this project with us. And I invite you, invite members of the public who are here in the audience, anyone listening, we're also asking for anyone that you would suggest we send the RFP to. If you know of good contractors, good consultants out there, let us know. We're going to be advertising it widely, and we would definitely welcome any ideas for consultants that we should share the RFP with. Any questions at this point?
I don't have any questions. Okay. I just like for Dr. Jason, I just want to commend you and Julianne Polanco and Jesse Ochoa Diaz.
I should have introduced Jesse. Jesse's our program assistant working on this project too.
The outreach the SHPO's office has done has been, in my opinion, it's been done very well. Because not only were you sending letters and emails, but you actually phone calls. Mm-hmm. And then again, you presented at the same time as Jason did on the digital atlas. And I only received positive comments from our tribal members who attended. They're very excited that this state is being inclusive and wants to hear our stories.
I'm so glad we did those listening sessions, and thank you for I learned a lot, and it was very good to get the feedback that we got even before I finished the RFP, because I got some ideas for what I wanted to include in that, as well as I took lots of notes, and I was sharing my notes with Jesse, and it was a lot of things for us to consider going forward, which is very helpful for us, to things we need to keep in mind, things we need to think about how we want to tackle this, but it was so valuable for me to get the feedback that we got in those listening sessions.
And thank you for adding more money to the study.
I'm so glad we could.
Make sure I thank Julie Polanco as well, because it's an important study. Mm-hmm. There's really nothing from the Native perspective when it comes to the missions.
No, it's terrible.
Even just trying to get the scripts of visitors coming to the missions amended. Uh-huh. Is a difficult task.
And that's another.
Hopefully, with this context statement, it'll be easier to persuade the Catholic Church include that. But thank you very much as a Mission Indian. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, we are hoping it will lead to better interpretation in our missions as well. That could be something that it could be used for.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Commissioners, any other comments, questions? Okay, thank you. Thank you both. Okay. Now we're on to public comments. This is the portion where any member of the public may submit a comment on any item that was not on the agenda. Any members of the public wishing to comment? Okay. Hearing none, we'll close the public comments. And we will move for adjournment at 1:20 p.m. Thank you, everyone, for being here today. Good meeting. Do I need a motion? What do I need to do? Can I just adjourn? Sure. Apple. Apple.